Welcome to the fifth installment of this particular podcast with Talking with Dr. Carolina. What a great day it really is. I have been very fortunate to have some of the most interesting interviews, and I believe this is going to be one of the most interesting to date because we're joined by Mr. James Powell at JLP, Justice, Love, and Peace. James Powell is known throughout Staten Island and Manhattan for some great work that he's done, both in healthcare and in culinary arts. I mean, he's just a Renaissance man. So, James, would you just say hello to our listeners and introduce yourself?
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. I'm James Powell.
Sir, tell us something about yourself. You have such a history, such an interesting background. Maybe you might want to share with our listeners your age and something about your childhood.
Okay, I'm at the age of 81. I was born in a little town, North Carolina, named Scotland Neck, North Carolina. My family were sharecroppers. And back then, it was tough. You grew your own crops, and you grew your fruit and vegetables, that was all there. But nothing else was positive. Everything else was pretty much negative. You grew up knowing, being told, rather, that you was less than someone that looked like, that you didn't look like.
I remember you sharing with me a story about your last interaction. Well, your last interaction before leaving with the gentleman who owned the land. Could you share that with us? That last interaction where you made your decision to leave and to come north? I think you were telling us about how at the end of the year when you had to count up the monies and things of that nature.
Oh yes. At the end of the year, my mother, there was not a father figure. So my mother and I, it was considered the farmland was sharecroppers. Mm-hmm. It was given so much land to plant and harvest. And at the end of the year, my mother and I walked up what they call the big house, called Settling Up. And this man that we worked for place these books all over the table. And I'm looking at these books, and I later learned in life they are called ledgers. And he started to tell us what we had planted, what we had harvested, how much money he put in it. And after all was said and done, he looked at my mother and he said, "Sofa, for the year you get back a big $75.
For an entire year?
For an entire year. And I looked at my mother and she looked at me and then she said to him that, "Well, I don't have anybody that wants to farm anymore. He's the oldest boy in the house, and without him, we can't farm." And so now he wanted to insist and talk to me and staying. Now, even though I was a youngster, I understood if you went against the man, a lot of things could happen to you. So,
and I bet you none of those things would be good.
None would be good. So I decided, yes, I would stay. It's good. On our way home, my mother got on me and she said, "Why did you change your mind in front of him?" And I said to my mother, "What I say to him and what we do is two different things." And she was very proud. She said, "You're growing up, boy." And we walked one night miles to a man and told him we were going to move and where we're going to move. And it was a house in the city. And we did that. And before we moved, the man we were currently working for drove by the house and wanted me to go with him to a town to dig up plants. So I said, well, it's a free day, but I thought I'd go to school today. I went to school very little. So he said, okay. But I didn't go and stayed home because we were moving. And we moved, and that afternoon, I saw this man at a local store, and he was perturbed that things had turned out the way they did, and he made it a point that I should never put my feet on his land property again. If I did, what would happen to me? And he said, your livestock and all that stays there. And I smiled and said, sir, we moved that last night. And that was the end of that, and we moved in the city. And my mother worked at cooking for here, cleaning there. And that's how we made a living. And my aunt, who was a beautician in New York, she paid the rent, which was $20 a month for a 4-bedroom and 2 bathrooms. And I went from I went there, I was able to go to school. I knew very little. I depended on a lot of classmates, and I depended on the teachers.
Jim, you mentioned about school, and I think this is important, especially for our younger listeners to understand the challenges of going to school. I remember you saying or telling a story about wanting to go to school, and the same gentleman that you were working for forbade you to go to school. You recall that?
Oh, yes. I went to school one day, and that afternoon, I was up feeding the animals, the mules, the cattle. And he said, where did you go today? And I said, I went to school. And he said to me, you didn't ask me, could you go to school? And I smiled and said, well, you're not my father. I don't know who he is, but you're not my father. So he said, you better not go to school again without asking me. You'll see what happened to you if you should. And that is how a lot of stuff that I grew up, and a lot of that stuff, if you're not careful, gets on your skin and can make you do things that you will regret later on in life. But I was wise enough from my mother and grandmother to not to make those errors.
Jim, I notice you always wear these very fancy leather gloves. I mean, you drive a beautiful car and you come out very stunningly with those gloves. What are those gloves about?
The gloves, I wear those gloves because when we were working on the farm, I used to take the tractors, the equipment, and cultivate the lands in tractors. And then I was too small to handle, and when the wheel would spin, that would hit my hands. But what made the gloves a factor, a huge factor, is that when I was in high school, students drove school bus.
Wow.
The big buses that you see out here now would hold 6 to 5 kids. Mm-hmm. I drove those buses, but now those same buses have power steering. Back in that time, they did not. And many times the wheel would spin, and a couple of times I got broken fingers from that. So I started to wear gloves to protect my hands, rather, and that was way back yonder. And to this day, it feels like that I'm not dressed unless I have on a pair of gloves. It can be 100 degrees outside. That is the reason that I wear gloves.
Wow. Well, one thing is for certain, you are known for your dressing. You're certainly known. You are the vice president of the largest employer at one time in the entire borough, Staten Island, Staten Island University Hospital. And I believe the only person of color who ever ascended to that post prior or since. So that's very significant. But you often talk also about a story about coming from the South to the North with your aunt and how that was such a ordeal, that process of leaving the South, coming up to live with your auntie after leaving the farm. I know my grandfather says something similar about having to almost like escape from the South to get to the North.
It was a difficult thing. I had an experience that when I left the South, that was a very good experience. I used to, when we moved into the city, I used to work at this drugstore. And this man that I worked for was a good man, but he owned a drugstore in that town, so he had to behave like the other owners and people in that town. So therefore, there were certain things I couldn't do. When I was on duty, I could eat and drink any food that was in the restaurant. I mean, in the drugstore. But when I was off duty, I couldn't go in there to buy a soda or ice cream. And when I used to deliver the medication to the people in the town, you had to go around to the back door and place the medicine on a little board that was extension from the house to put the medication on, because a black person was not allowed to touch a white person's hand, especially a female. And
interesting,
you would do that, and you would walk back off the porch, and I can remember vividly, I would get on my bike and sometime someone would thump a nickel, a dime out onto the ground for me that was tipped.
Just throw it on the ground.
Throw it on the ground. Sometimes I would pick it up and sometimes I would not. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was so powerful is when I graduated high school, my mother at that time worked and cleaned for the man that owned the drugstore. Mm-hmm. And he said to my mother, have me to come by his house the next day. He wanted to talk to me.
And I think your nickname was Sam, right?
Yeah, Sam. Mm-hmm. So I walked up and I went to the back door as customary. And this man walked out and walked behind me, placed his hands on my shoulders, and he said, let this be the last day that you walk to the back door of any man's home. If you can't walk through the door he walks through, you got no business there in the first place. He said, go north, get as much education as you can. People can take your life, but they can't take that. And through that, mm-hmm. I came to New York, and I worked at places, and I had the good fortunes to work with Jackie Robinson.
Yes, tell us about that, working with Jackie Robinson.
Well, when I got to New York, a year after I was here, I think Jackie Robinson was an executive for Chocolate Nuts. And I started to work at, I was working at Chock Full of Nuts. And we got to meet each other. He used to come around and look. And I was one of the assistant managers. And he and I used to sit and talk. And we talked about school. And he said, you should go on. And every time we would see each other, he he would talk to me about school. Very mild-mannered man, it seems, when you're talking to him. But
to break through the National Baseball League as the first black man, I guess he had to be quite mild-mannered with
yes.
all of the taunting that 42 had to deal with.
Yes, and I think I appreciated that mm-hmm. because I saw some of my behavior from his, mm-hmm. but didn't understand it at that time until I started to think, well, he got where he got by being good what he was good at, and didn't always said what he wanted to say, but didn't always let people know exactly what he was thinking.
Mm, very good. Jim, you talk, I think Malafi Asante wrote a book called Afrocentricity, and he talks about people of color, and particularly black people in America, having to have a double consciousness, having to know how to deal and function in their own communities, but also having to know how to function at the boardroom or in predominantly white communities as well. And so I know having to work in white institutions as a black man in particularly, you always have to be twice as good, twice as smart, and always having to understand how they think versus how you feel. So what a wonderful perspective. But you also shared with us another interesting historic person that you were close to, Malcolm X.
Yes, Malcolm X was the man. When I was working for Chockfulness, I also used to, I have this neatness about me. And I used to go and get my shoes shined in a little place every day or every other day, depending on the weather.
This is in Harlem?
In Harlem, 125th Street.
My.
And right near Teresa Hotel. Mm-hmm. It was a little deli
that's,
there.
That's where life really was at
yes.
that time, right?
And I was in there and getting my shoes shined, and Malcolm walked and sat in the chair right next to me, shoe shine stand. And we engaged in a conversation. And we started talking. And I used to see him, you know, a couple of times a week. And we talk. And then, where I was living in Brooklyn, a young man lived in the house there that we rented from, that I rented from, asked me to go with him to the temple. Me? I said, what? He said, I want you to go meet me to the temple. Southern boy, I said, what's that? So he said, you'll see, come go with me to the temple, you'll be surprised, I'm not going to tell you anymore. And I went with him to the temple, and when we walked there, 117th Street and 7th Avenue, I believe, is the address, and we walked in, and suddenly in comes Malcolm X, and there, big as his life, standing there, and I was able to watch the man do his thing. Mm-hmm. And doing his thing is what he did. Without going through everything, when I was at Baruch, because Jackie Robinson made sure I went back to school, mm-hmm. when I was at Baruch, I wrote a paper of the greatest man I ever met, and that was Malcolm X. And Baruch kept the paper.
Wow.
He kept a copy of the paper. I learned a lot, a hell of a lot from the man. Mm-hmm. But there were things there that he believed and that he was about. I was raised a little bit different.
And I do understand what you're saying, because even Malcolm changed at the end, close to the end of his life.
Yes, he
some
did.
Of the more radical.
Yes, he got away from that. Yeah.
Yeah, so interesting.
Yes, yes.
To say the least.
Yes. But very, very, those two men, very, very powerful. And they used to say, the only thing that you can totally believe in, when you see it, if you can't touch it, mm-hmm. it's not so real. You have to be able, when you're doing something or talking something, to get feedback and make sure that you understand what is being said to you or done to you. Because if you do not, then you have no one to blame but yourself.
Mr. Powell, you are sharing with us such prolific words of wisdom. Considering what's going on today, I mean, you know, this is not the first time in American history that we see an uprising, as it were, especially centered around the treatment of African-American men in this country, African-American people, people of color, but in particular black men. You being a black man who has garnered such success over your life in amidst such poverty and such oppression, such racism, give us, I know this is kind of heavy, but you're the right man for this task. Give us some wisdom. Some of the young men that are dealing with the stressors of today, myself included, trying to make a difference, trying to live a productive and positive life. Can you just share with us some of your wisdom? And then I have one more question for you after you respond to that.
Well, I used to think that I would not be what someone else wanted me to be. That I would be the person that whatever I said to somebody or did to somebody, I would feel okay if they did the same thing to me. So I had to think about how I dealt with people, because people would always, I don't know if I'm answering your question, people would always say something to make you look bad in public. So they can say, I told you so. I told you. So as a person of color, I had to be always, always careful and mindful of where I was and to whom I was talking to.
Yes, that is an extraordinary burden. Having myself served as the first or the only black person in a corporate setting or in any environment, you do have the burden, the additional burden of being the representation or the representative of the entire race, of the entire population. And you don't want to give people an excuse to say, you know, that's why I don't do this or that for them, because of your own behavior. Mr. Powell, I have the next question I have for you is, would you consent to come back and give us another opportunity to ask you questions? Because I know there is so much more that you can share with us and that we need to hear from you. Would you consent to come back? I'm not putting any pressure on you. No pressure at all. But please consent to come back.
I feel good inside that I'm sitting here talking. The answer is yes.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. Again, this is Dr. Carolina, talking, speaking, engaging, human interest stories, and wonderful opportunities to share stories with such profound people, such as Mr. James Powell. I hope you will consent to come and to share with us as well. Again, coming to you soon. Thank you. Have a blessed and productive day.